Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's special series, The Authoritarian Playbook. Today, we're discussing the Trump administration's continued attacks on climate action and environmental protections. On his first day in office, Trump ordered federal agencies to begin gutting protections for the climate, clean air and water, and public lands. The Center for Biological Diversity says these actions could lead to irreversible climate catastrophe if they go unchallenged. The United States is the world's largest historical emitter of greenhouse gases and the second largest annual emitter of greenhouse gases following China. That's according to the EPA. Scientists across the board say we must transition away from fossil fuels, but the Trump administration is doing the exact opposite. The United States under Trump is now an outlier and the global shift to clean energy. Yesterday, Trump spoke at the UN General Assembly in New York City, calling climate change the, quote, greatest con job.
Years ago in the 1920s and the 1930s, they said, global cooling will kill the world. We have to do something. Then they said, global warming will kill the world. But then it started getting cooler, so now they could just call it climate change because that way they can't miss. It's climate change, because if it goes higher or lower, whatever the hell happens, this climate change, it's the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world, in my opinion. Climate change, no matter what happens, you're involved in that. No more global warming, no more global cooling. All of these predictions made by the United Nations and many others, often for bad reasons, were wrong. They were made by stupid people that have cost their country's fortunes and given those same countries no chance for success. If you don't get away from this green scam, your country is going to fail.
That is Donald Trump speaking at the UN General Assembly in New York City yesterday. Once again, we did a lot of shows about what happened under the Biden administration, and even a number of environmental justice organizations said that the laws passed under Biden were the strongest we've ever seen about climate. And now that has all stopped. The Trump administration is doing the exact opposite. So what does this mean for the climate movement in the United States and around the world? Today, we're joined by two guests. Dr. Gretchen Goldman is president and CEO of the Union of Concerned Scientists. Dr. Goldman is an environmental engineer who served in the White House as assistant director for environmental science, engineering, policy, and justice in the Climate and Environment Division of the Office of Science and Technology Policy. She also served as climate change research and technology director at the U.S. Department of Transportation. And Dr. Goldman joins us from Climate Week in New York. Hi, Gretchen. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Jason Rylander, legal director at the Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute, where he works on litigation and policy initiatives to limit fossil fuels and advance a clean energy future. Jason Rylander also joins us from Climate Week in New York. Hi, Jason. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Well, great to have both of you. I just want to ask you both, what concerns you the most about the climate crisis today? So 2024 was once again Earth's hottest year on record. The number of climate-related incidents worldwide has significantly increased over the last 5 years. I was just reading a piece in the CBC, Oceans Dangerously Acidic from Carbon Emissions, according to a report. The Planetary Health Check report says 7 of 9 boundaries have now been crossed. So much is happening so quickly. Gretchen, let's start off with you. When you look at what's happening with climate change and the climate crisis around the globe, what concerns you the most?
One thing that I'm very focused and very concerned about is the fact that we as a country are abdicating our responsibility, our leadership on addressing the climate crisis. We're seeing a lot of the progress we've made in recent years in reducing heat trapping emissions, and all of the investments in clean energy across the country are now being threatened by the Trump administration and their actions to dismantle both the policy actions and the science underlying it in this country now. And so the lack of federal leadership in this moment, I find most concerning given the scale and speed at which we need to move to address the climate crisis and reduce emissions as quickly as possible.
Can you briefly tell us what is happening to the policies that were passed under the Biden administration?
We're seeing an assault on climate science and policy across the board at the federal level. As you noted, right out of the gate, we saw this under this second Trump administration with gutting of policies, with firing of scientists at federal agencies, dismantling of climate-related programs, with destruction of the U.S. Global Change Research Program. And now we're seeing an attack on the endangerment finding, which is the provides the legal and scientific underpinning for a lot of the climate action that we see coming out of the Environmental Protection Agency and across the government. And so there's really a removal of our ability to use the tools of government to address this problem. A lot of the systems and mechanisms and processes and investments that were set up in the previous administration are now under threat with a lot of the dismantling that's happening under this administration now.
Jason, what about you? What concerns you most about the climate crisis today?
Well, I think Dr. Goldman is exactly right. We are seeing an unprecedented assault on the nation's environmental laws and regulations and on the agencies that have been tasked by Congress with enforcing those laws and protecting the environment and human health and safety. That is going to make it extremely difficult in the future to sort of rebuild the infrastructure necessary to take the actions that, you know, we need in order to address the climate crisis. Save biodiversity, keep our air and water clean, and make our lives more, you know, healthier and more sustainable. I think, you know, what concerns me most about the climate crisis is that it's happening. It's happening now. We see every year new temperature records being set. As you mentioned, the last year was one of the hottest years on record, and one before that the same, and it's been like that for a decade and more now. And we're seeing historic wildfires, as you know, as you well know, the wildfires that ravaged Los Angeles earlier this year killed 29 people. They cost more than $250 billion in damages. Fire seasons are lengthened all over the country, but particularly in California, in Canada, and around the world. That will cause significant ecological damage, as well as implications for geopolitics, for migration, for conflict. We're in the midst of climate change, and to deny that it's happening and having real effects on people's lives is patently absurd. So it's frustrating and disappointing to see this administration not just walking back some regulations in the kind of give and take you typically see from administration to administration, but completely abandoning U.S. leadership and doing so this speech yesterday was just absolutely embarrassing. The world leaders hearing President Trump speak about climate change, calling it the greatest con job, calling green energy a scam, calling climate science a product of stupid people is so absurd that it's hard to believe we are here at this point when action is necessary.
Also, Jason, because things are moving so quickly in this country, and so much of what this administration is doing is head spinning, it's easy to forget major, major events like the heavy rains that led to the flash floods in Texas on July 4th, killing more than 130 people. We saw heavy rainfall bringing deadly floods to New Mexico and North Carolina, the downpours that flooded New York subways. There's a new piece in NBC about the heat and what's that, what that is doing to U.S. rivers, by Evan Bush. A new analysis of 1,500 river locations over more than 40 years found that the frequency, intensity, and duration of heat waves is increasing in streams across the country. This is posing a threat to many species that are adapted to cooler temperatures. So there's that. Reuters has a new piece about, this is just shocking, Europe had over 62,700 heat-related deaths last year. I mean, that is unbelievable. 62,000 in Europe just last year. Jason, it's just, it's easy to miss these things because so much is happening in this country. It's almost like whiplash.
It's definitely overwhelming. The headlines every day have exactly the types of stories that you're talking about. And, you know, I think it's, there's some truth to the adage that, you know, one death is a tragedy and thousands of deaths are a statistic. I think people sometimes tune out. But obviously they shouldn't, because these are very, very serious impacts that we're seeing from climate change. And the point I want to make about what you've just said, too, is that the Trump administration is going after the endangerment finding, which is the EPA's decision years ago that climate change causes these kinds of environmental and health effects, that it is a threat to public health and welfare. And when they first did that finding in 2009, the science was already certain, but there has been so many more events and so much more science produced in the last 20 years that make it undeniable that climate change is having these kinds of impacts. So to see EPA, which is tasked with protecting our environment and public health, willfully turning around and denying climate science, denying the very, very real effects that we can see with our own eyes, that, you know, we are experiencing personally, is really disappointing. And obviously we'll be fighting that in court if they move forward with their evisceration of Clean Air Act protections and emissions controls under the Clean Air Act.
Gretchen, the other thing that's so important to point out is that scientists have said that we really need to cut global carbon emissions in half by 2030 and then zero them around 2040. And that is why this election was so incredibly important for the climate. During the first Trump term, you were research director at the Center for Science and Democracy at the Union of Concerned Scientists, and your team documented more than 200 attacks on science from this administration. What would you say is different in the second administration?
We are seeing those same kind of attacks, but we're seeing the scope, the scale, and the severity of those tactics be much more aggressive in this administration. We just came out with a report at the 6 months mark of this administration, and that found 402 of those attacks on science. So you'll see that's nearly double what we counted under the entirety of the first Trump administration. So we're seeing that increased frequency of attacks on science across the board. And I'd note how much more severe a lot of those attacks are under this administration, because they now include more shuttering of entire programs, firing technical agency staff en masse. They're much more severe than, you know, for example, a lot of scientific integrity issues were on a smaller scale, you know, a political appointee changing the scientific content of a report in one instance, for example. But now we're seeing just much more severe restrictions and dismantling of science within federal agencies. And the other really important difference that I want to emphasize is the removal of independent checks on what the administration is doing. Because in the first Trump administration and all administrations prior, we had a lot of opportunity for independent checks on the administration's attacks on science. There was scientific integrity officers and infrastructure across the government. There were inspectors general at every agency that had a lot of independence and often worked in tandem with scientific integrity offices around issues that came up. We saw a lot more of Congress using its independent powers to do oversight hearings and investigations and otherwise check on what the administration is doing. And now we're seeing that a lot of those independent checks on the administration's destruction of science are diminished or disappeared. And that's really very concerning. And it is a characteristic of the authoritarian playbook and ways that I think is very concerning. And climate science and climate progress are a big casualty of that effect.
Can you tell us a bit more about this? I'm guessing that a lot of people don't know much about these independent checks.
Yeah, so one way that we preserve our democracy and have the ability to have science-based decision-making across the government is because there are independent checks on actions that are taken under the executive branch. So historically, and how we want this to work is that the executive branch makes decisions. There are guardrails that are put up by the courts. There is an independent Congress that preserves the power of the purse and ensures that the executive is following laws as they were passed. And there's independent checks within agencies, federal servants, career federal servants, as opposed to political appointees in federal agencies. They had a fair amount of independence historically and were able to follow the laws, do their job. They could push back. They could file whistleblower complaints. And all of these, that sort of independence and sort of ability of career federal servants has long allowed us to ensure that we continue to follow laws, that we uphold the science and process that ensures that we are making careful and evidence-based decisions across the government. But now that we're seeing this administration be so retaliatory and so firing of people that disagree with him in many cases, targeting even scientific voices outside of government, as we've seen with some of the academic institutions and law firms, all of these things lead to a chilling effect where people are not going to feel as empowered to step up, to push back, to counter what the administration is doing, even if it is illegal or otherwise runs afoul with the missions of agencies and the goals of the government. And so it's really a concerning state of affairs as far as the executive being able to push the bounds of what is legal and what has been done in the past.
That is Dr. Gretchen Goldman, President and CEO of the Union of Concerned Scientists. We're also joined today by Jason Rylander, Legal Director at the Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute. Today, on today's Your Call, we continue our series, The Authoritarian Playbook. We're discussing the Trump administration's attacks on climate action and environmental protections. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. What would you like to know about the Trump administration's attacks on taking any sort of action on climate change and the climate crisis? The U.S. really is now an outlier in the global shift to clean energy. So what questions do you have about what this means and where we are going, given that scientists say that we needed to get off fossil fuels decades ago? Jason, what would you like to add? What are your thoughts about the changes that we're seeing between the first and second administrations?
Well, I think Dr. Goldman was right. We're seeing some similar types of attacks on environmental protections, but at a scope and scale that is absolutely unprecedented. And not only is this administration going after the endangerment finding and the ability of EPA to regulate emissions under the Clean Air Act, and that includes emissions from power plants, emissions from cars and trucks, but they're also undermining the Endangered Species Act, the National Environmental Policy Act, which is often called the Magna Carta of our environmental laws, and plays a very important role in making sure that the actions the federal government participates in do not adversely affect the environment, or at least that the risks are considered adequately before projects move forward. Now, we're seeing expansion of drilling in our public lands and in the Arctic and in the Permian. Of course, we've already talked about withdrawing from the Paris Agreement and just the absence of the United States as a leader on the world stage. So, it's amazing and very, very disappointing to see this unprecedented attack on the laws that help keep us safe and protect our environment and ecology for present and future generations. But I would say that the mood here at Climate Week is very interesting because there are folks here from all over. And I think that what we saw yesterday with President Trump at the United Nations was a kind of a jump the shark moment where the rest of the world is committed to moving forward to a renewable energy future. And the absence of the U.S. from that stage may in some respects, be a positive thing, because I think the European Union understands that liquefied natural gas is now an expensive option compared to renewables, that there is not going to be a future in fossil fuels. And they are moving forward with their transition, regardless of what's happening here in the U.S. So there's an interesting mix of both optimism and concern here in New York with many folks just pressing ahead because we know how important it is to take action on climate change and to build a sustainable future.
Yeah, can you talk a bit more about that, Jason? Because the United States obviously has so much power around the globe, and a number of countries were looking to the United States to put money forward, for example, to help nations that are really sinking. And then, of course, to talk about frontline communities around the globe, given that the United States is the second largest emitter of greenhouse gas emissions. What are you hearing from people about the United States now doing the exact opposite under the Trump administration? What does that mean on the ground?
On the ground, it's really devastating because you're exactly right. After some of the last councils of the parties that they call the COPs, the one like Paris and the ones that they've had in recent years, there was a real effort to get the developed world to come up with what's called nationally determined contributions that would support the clean energy transition in countries that are in many instances feeling the brunt of climate change, but are not responsible for historic or current global emissions. And a lot of that, those commitments that the Biden administration had started to make and that we were hoping we would be able to move forward with are gone. And so that's absolutely having an impact. But we are also seeing, oddly enough, other countries like China. We hear a lot about China, but China is now probably the world leader in renewable energy technology. They are producing electric vehicles at the moment when the U.S. is moving away from them. They are providing more solar panels and more renewable technologies to other countries in the world than we are. So there is a vacuum in world leadership right now that other countries are filling. And that will have long-term repercussions both for the U.S. economy, for energy prices, for affordability. But what it doesn't mean is that the effort to address climate change is stopping. Quite the opposite. The rest of the world is continuing to move forward without the United States. And as much as we should be moving much faster with U.S. leadership, there is at least a little bit of a bright spot in knowing that the European Union is still moving forward, that other countries are moving forward. But unfortunately, it is true that the less developed nations are needing support that they're not getting from us and hopefully can get it from other places.
And just one example of that, Hilda Hine is the president of the Marshall Islands, and she told the New York Times that the Marshall Islands would be submerged by the year 2050 if the world does not do its part. The population of the Marshall Islands has fallen to 37,000, down from 50,000 10 years ago, as islanders are leaving their country rather than rebuilding their homes after floods. And this is just one example of what is happening with small island nations. And the New York Times actually has a live blog from Climate Action, just letting people know what's going on, especially in light of what's happening in the United States and the Trump and the speech that Trump gave yesterday. On today's Your Call, we continue our new series, The Authoritarian Playbook, by talking about the Trump administration's attacks on climate action and environmental protections. Jason Rylander is legal director at the Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute. Dr. Gretchen Goldman is president and CEO of the Union of Concerned Scientists. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we continue our special series, The Authoritarian Playbook. Today, we're discussing the Trump administration's attacks on climate action and environmental protections. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Jason Rylander, legal director at the Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute, where he works on litigation and policy initiatives to limit fossil fuels and advance a clean energy future. Dr. Gretchen Goldman is president and CEO of the Union of Concerned Scientists. Dr. Goldman is an environmental engineer and served in the White House as Assistant Director for Environmental Science, Engineering, Policy, and Justice in the Climate and Environment Division of the Office of Science and Technology Policy. We have an email from Graham who writes, won't there come a day soon when renewables are so profitable that all the fossil fuel companies will want a piece of the action? Are oil companies positioning themselves to profit from the massive demand for solar and wind? One would cynically assume that the answer is yes. Do your guests have thoughts? Do you want to take that one first, Gretchen?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You'd think, right? I would say that fossil fuel companies, years and years ago, when they knew that climate change was happening, that their products were contributing to harm to the climate, they could have made that choice to diversify their investments, to tell the truth about the reality of climate change and those contributions. But we haven't seen it, right? They've continued to double down, to go further down the path of our reliance on fossil fuels when there was and is so much opportunity for us to shift to that clean energy future in bigger ways. And so I think that we will see how that plays out as the economics shift. The good news is, of course, that clean energy is cheaper in lots of contexts now, and it is very clear when that the numbers don't lie, that clean energy is the smarter investment now, and we're going to see more and more companies and governments make that choice and invest more in clean energy technologies. And we're already seeing that proliferation across the globe. And so there's really an opportunity for us to really lean into that more, even with or without federal leadership on that front. And I think there's a lot more, and we should expect a lot more of fossil fuel companies and how they behave in given this reality.
What would you add, Jason?
Yeah, I think the fact of the matter is that renewable energy is increasingly the cheapest, most sustainable, and healthiest form of energy available. And you would think that there would be enormous business opportunity in developing and promoting renewable energy. But the fact is that the fossil fuel industry is doubling down, and their allies in Congress and the Trump administration are giving them reason to do this. They have billions of dollars in potentially stranded assets that they are trying to protect. And I think it is unfortunate that the leadership of a lot of these companies would rather drain every last bit of oil and gas from the ground and make every last dollar of profit that they can, rather than protect the planet, our wildlife, our communities. We see what they do in the Gulf South with frontline communities building more and more liquefied natural gas export plants in sensitive marshlands in historically black and marginalized communities, with absolutely no respect or concern for the health impacts of these facilities in their midst. So they are continuing business as usual, and this administration is empowering them to do that even as the rest of the world moves forward and the economics of renewable energy will make that transition away, hopefully inevitable.
It's also so important to remember, thanks to the Brennan Center for this reminder, they just came out with a piece recently, that Trump asked oil and gas executives last year to raise $1 billion for his campaign and told them he'd grant their policy wish list if he won. He said the investment would be a deal given the taxes and regulation they would avoid under his presidency. He also offered to help fast-track fossil fuel industry mergers and acquisitions if he won. The industry responded by spending lavishly to elect Trump, giving at least $75 million to his campaign and affiliated PACs. And then there's a new piece out in Wired that says the Trump administration has added nearly $40 billion in brand new federal subsidies for oil, gas, and coal in 2025, sending an additional $4 billion out the door every year for fossil fuels over the next decade. So they're just doubling down on this, Jason. I mean, to think $40 billion in new federal subsidies for oil, gas, and coal?
Well, and that's on top of hundreds of billions of dollars in current and historic subsidies that the fossil fuel industry receives. There was a recent report as well from Oil Change International that talked about how much subsidies the industry gets. So it's incredibly disingenuous and really amazing to see the Trump administration eviscerating the modest subsidies and contributions and incentives that were part of the Biden administration's climate bill while handing out even bigger rewards to the fossil fuel industry at this point in history when we absolutely, the science is unequivocal, we have to move away from fossil fuels.
Rose, if I might
Sure.
add, I would just also say, in many cases, the industry isn't even asking for these things, these rollbacks of policies. It's the administration is digging down deeper, even when industry doesn't necessarily even want the regulatory rollbacks or the destruction of a lot of these reporting requirements around climate. And so, we're really seeing them go deep on this for no reason that makes sense.
Can we talk about what this is going to mean for frontline communities that are already dealing with massive air pollution, greenhouse gas emissions? Gretchen, you served in the White House as Assistant Director for Environmental Science, Engineering, Policy, and Justice in the Climate and Environment Division of the Office of Science and Technology Policy. I mean, I remember doing so many shows with frontline communities who were very critical of the Biden administration, but their continued activism really changed what the administration did when it came to passing new laws, when it came to spending money on frontline communities and allowing these communities to determine their own futures. And they said, the work that we did really made a difference because the administration came around on a number of policies. So how are frontline communities going to be affected by what we're seeing under the Trump administration?
That's right. It's been devastating to watch that destruction. When I was in the White House, I was part of the team that worked on Justice 40 and the environmental justice and science efforts of the Biden-Harris administration. And it took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to shift federal attention and resources and direction towards addressing the huge inequities that we know exist and who is exposed to. through pollution and other environmental stressors to make up for the decades-long disinvestment in frontline communities that this country had. And so the administration went farther than we had ever gone before as a nation at the federal level to address that longstanding inequity in pollution exposure, and yet, and as you said, it was making a difference, right? And but the problem is because that it took so it was years and years of disinvestment. We needed more time to really do more on that and keep it going. And unfortunately, we're seeing those impacts now with not only destruction and discontinuing of a lot of those programs that were meant to address those inequities, but also even clawing back some of the money that was already obligated, that was already out the door or headed to those communities. And so unfortunately, that means that those communities are now without those resources, do not have the same attention and ability to respond to climate impacts, to help address a lot of the other kinds of pollution that we know they are disproportionately exposed to. And so it's really leaving us less prepared for future climate and weather threats, as well as a failure to address a lot of the disproportionate impacts of other kinds of air, water, soil pollution in the future.
And Jason, under Justice 40, 40% of federal climate investments were supposed to go directly to frontline communities most affected by poverty and pollution. And Trump rescinded Biden's executive order establishing Justice 40. And I always wondered why the administration didn't talk more about this. I don't think a lot of people even knew about Justice 40.
I think a lot of people didn't know about it, and it was a small but very necessary step toward providing resources and some measure of justice to communities that have suffered for far too long the impacts of the fossil fuel industry and petrochemical industry, which have built these plants right in the middle of historic communities. Trump administration is not only eliminating some of these individual programs, but they are literally stripping the words environmental justice from every regulation that they can. I mean, these are fundamentally, and I'm just going to say, they're fundamentally racist policies that the Trump administration is pursuing that are going to put communities and people's lives at risk. And there are scores of new projects, new LNG export terminals, new petrochemical plants that are being proposed for these very same communities, and it will be harder to fight them because not only will there be no commitment to environmental justice, but some of the environmental laws that traditionally have played a very big role in either stopping these projects or helping to ensure that their impacts are minimized, like the National Environmental Policy Act, Clean Air Act, are being eviscerated by this administration too.
Jason Rylander is legal director at the Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute. Dr. Gretchen Goldman is president and CEO of the Union of Concerned Scientists. Today, it is our special series, The Authoritarian Playbook. We're discussing the Trump administration's attacks on climate action and environmental protections. You can join us at 866-798-8255 if you have any questions about where we are with the climate crisis and what it means now that the United States is an outlier. You can give us a call, any questions, what's happening in your community. We'd love to hear from you. Let's go to Ed in Berkeley. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. So I spent 14 years at Cal in the physics and nuclear engineering department. So the subject very dearly. As you know, there are two gases that are responsible are carbon dioxide and methane. Well, carbon dioxide, of course, fossil fuel and human living. Methane, animal farms. They contribute tremendous amount of animal farms. And so if we leave it to the government, it is beyond. It is, I think, my own feeling, I don't think we're going to see the end of this century, from global warming. Every year warmer, but also what we can do ourselves separately. First, stop using heating and cooling. Drive your car less and less and less, and do not meat any animal protein, because methane gas is 90 times as effective in global warming as carbon dioxide, and it is horrible how it treats its animals. So the last thing I'd like to say, it is hopeless. With Trump in office, it is hopeless. He's going exactly the opposite way, and it may be something God or the devil sent to Earth to put the end of civilization as we know it. Thank you. You always have a great show. You always do have a great show. And good to talk to you. Please, everybody, stop eating meat and stop driving your car as much as you can. Take public transportation and heating. I lived in Egypt where it gets really cold in the winter. It gets hot in the summer. We never heat or cool. Don't use conditioning or heating circulation. Thank you very much. You have a good day.
Thank you so much, Ed. So nice to hear from you. We'll get a response after we take a few more callers. Thank you. Let's go to David in Berkeley. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm so glad Ed pointed out the connection between petroleum and environmental protection, because petroleum goes into fertilizers and, of course, the animal industry, animal slaughter industry. Environment protection is apparently the last of the Democrats' concerns, and I just want to point out there's upcoming elections that will change the course of renewable energy. And this program really should be starting early to push some of these campaigns, such as the gubernatorial in New Mexico. Deb Haaland is on the my concerns is the better candidate. Unfortunately, the Democrats are pushing a small-time mayor who promises to support petroleum, whereas we know the history of Deb Haaland, who does not, and is a civil rights lawyer, and also our past interior Secretary of the Interior. It's important because right next door is Texas to New Mexico, and they're trying to influence the proportioning of the reproportion for voting. And if we have a gubernatorial candidate who will push back against that legislation that's creeping up from Texas, I think that we'll be addressing climate control and also have better outcome with better legislators. That's all I need to say.
Thank you so much, David, and we'll definitely be doing shows about those issues in the coming weeks. Thank you for the call. We'll get a response in just a minute. Let's go first to Tina in Oakland. Hi, Tina. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much. Thanks again for always focusing on the climate every week. What are the protections that are going away that are going to affect the Bay Area? For instance, we just had a tsunami warning not so long ago. We've had heat waves that we haven't experienced before. There's a diminishing in fog. What are some of the other things that are happening and that will be happening in the near future?
Well, thank you for that question. We'll definitely do a more local show about climate. I'm not sure our guests can answer that question, but I'll find out. We want to take one more caller and then we'll get responses. Let's go to Bob in San Francisco. Hi, Bob.
Hi. A previous caller used the word hopeless a couple of times that I heard. I think that's an inaccurate word. I think there's plenty of hope. People stay informed, stay tough, stay strong, listen to programs like this, get involved. I think the word hopeless is entirely inaccurate. And I do have a question. What is the opinion of your panelists, with special reference to the Union of Concerned Scientists, about nuclear power, which seems to have an awful lot of political momentum these days? Thank you. Great program.
Thank you so much. Gretchen, do you want to take that one first about nuclear power?
Yeah, I can just say at a high level, and then I'd love to address some of the others as well. But yes, so nuclear power, it needs to be done safely, it needs to be done correctly, and it has a role in limited ways. And we have a lot of specifics on that if you're interested in how we approach that and how we think about it, especially in this new environment where we're seeing, as you note, a lot more attention to modular reactors and what does that look like and what kind of future could look like. And so we have a lot of questions and concerns about how that's implemented. And so that is something to be considered as we look at what is this new energy landscape and how best do we approach it. And that leads me to, I wanted to address some of the other points, if I may, from other callers around what impacts will be in different places in the Bay Area. I would just say a few things. And one is that right now we're seeing a lot of cuts to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which does a lot of the monitoring of climate and weather elements. And we're seeing cuts to FEMA on the disaster response side. And I think those are two areas where lots of parts of the country could be affected as we see extreme events happen in the coming years. And there's a lot of potential for impacts of how a lot of what's happening at the federal level will impact locally. And I hope you're able to cover that more in the future. Another element I would just flag on the caller that was talking about personal actions to take to help with climate emissions reductions, I would just put in a plug that if you are interested in any bigger investments at the personal level, this is the last few days for the electric vehicle tax credit before it expires because of the actions that Congress took earlier this year. And you have till the end of the calendar year to take advantage of some of the other home clean energy investments like heat pumps and solar panels on rooftops. So those are really good near-term opportunities for anyone who's so inclined to take those bigger actions as well.
All right. Thank you for that. And Jason, do you have any thoughts that you'd like to share about nuclear power? And would you like to address some of our other callers' questions and comments?
Yeah, just at a high level on the question of nuclear power, I think we have a affordable, readily deployable solution to the clean energy crisis that the need to go with clean energy, and it's the sun and wind, and we can deploy those assets so much faster and so much more cheaply than nuclear power, and without the waste issues that it is surprising to me that this country has not leaned in even more to those assets. I did want to touch on the state action question. It's a couple of callers sort of referenced both sort of hopelessness at the federal level, but also what might be going on in some of the individual states. And there really is an opportunity right now for creative, innovative policymaking at the state level. California's always been a leader in this area, and Governor Newsom in particular, I know, views himself as a climate champion. But in this last legislative session, there were bills signed that expanded oil drilling in Kern County. And that's exactly the opposite of what we need to be doing. There is legislation pending to create a climate superfund bill. It would provide resources to hold the fossil fuel industry accountable for the pollution that they have emitted over the years. Vermont and New York have already passed similar legislation. There are efforts underway in New Mexico and some other states as well to pass both incentives for renewable energy to replace some of the ones that may be going away under the federal and the Trump administration, but also to rein in emissions and hold industry accountable to the communities in those states. So there's a lot of opportunity for innovation at the state level that we need to lean into. We need to elect climate champions at the state and local level who can put those types of policies in place. And I think that's one of the bright spots, that even if federal policymaking right now seems to be a bit stymied, both in Congress and in the executive branch, there's a lot of opportunity for states and local governments to have an impact on climate change and in ways that will make their communities healthier and more sustainable.
And for listeners and people who have not been following this, just to give a bit more context about what's happening in California, CalMatters reports that after 2 years declaring special sessions targeting the oil and gas industry, Governor Newsom began to warm up to them as oil refineries announced closures that could send gas prices spiking. As a result, one of the bills he signed would boost domestic oil production in Kern County by approving a long-delayed environmental impact report for new wells. And we'll definitely do a show about this. We also got an email from a listener who wanted people to know about what's happening in Rohnert Park, California. There's a new incinerator there, according to this listener. It's an incinerator. It's the first proposed in California that uses a process called continuous microwave cryolysis, which the EPA classifies as incineration, and there's been a number of protests against this. So we'll definitely check that out and do a show about it soon. Final thoughts from both of you. A number of people have emailed just asking, what is the state of environmental activism at this time, given that the United States is now an outlier on the global shift to clean energy? Your final thoughts, Gretchen, about a minute left?
Yeah, I'll say it's alive and well. I was at Make Billionaires Pay March in New York on Saturday, and we're seeing increases in our activist network as well as our science network of experts. And so I hope you all will join us, and a lot of work we can do from the local all the way to the international level in terms of making our voice heard and pushing back.
And your final thoughts, Jason?
Yeah, I was there at that march, too. I think there's a lot of excitement still here in New York and around the country. People understand that the climate crisis is real, that it's happening to them, to their communities. And people are looking for ways to take action, whether it's at the individual level or to push back on some of these attacks that we're seeing from the Trump administration. I think this week was kind of a watershed moment. Some of the comments that Donald Trump made are so unhinged that they have to have some sort of public response. And we're certainly going to challenge a lot of these actions in court and use every lever that we can to push back. And so there's the movement is alive and well, and we're going to continue to push forward for a better future.
Jason Rylander is legal director at the Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute. Dr. Gretchen Goldman is president and CEO of the Union of Concerned Scientists. They are both joining us from Climate Week in New York City. Dr. Goldman and Jason, thank you for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks to Johanna Miyake for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. You can find all of our past authoritarian playbook shows at KALW.org. Click news and then your call. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.